Hey, Timothy.
Hey Jay,
How are you, my friend?
I'm doing fine. What about you?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. Spasiba, что вестись? It's great to have you back.
I'm glad to be back. Hold on for a second. I just need to open a document.
Yeah, not a problem, not a problem. So, for those that don't know, Timofey is a trainer of both Russian cosmonauts and American astronauts at the Yuri Gagarin Space Center in Moscow. And he's also the general director of a Russian-based UFO research group called Association Ecology of the Unknown, or the AEU. They have a very impressive membership list of Russian scientists and academics and some former high-ranking military officials for the Russian Federation. And they do also have an international membership represented in multiple countries. And Timofey is the general director of the AEU. So we did speak quite a while ago, but I thought it'd be good to get Timofey back on. We'll have a catch up and see if there's anything else that he wants to talk about.
Thank you for introducing me. Today, I would like to talk about something that we consider very important because recently we have seen in the UFO community, in the worldwide community that researches UFOs and looks for extraterrestrial life outside the Earth. So that people usually want to find evidence of the fact that the extraterrestrials exist, or some evidence about that the UFOs are real, maybe some artifacts, some findings, some traces of UFOs landings, so things like that, material evidence. Well, I would like to just briefly talk about our approach to finding evidence, our Russian point of view, our cosmists' point of view. We have a number of scientists that study the universe, the cosmos, how it is structured, how it works, and of course are into the exploring the unknown in terms of UFOs, UFO sightings, extraterrestrial presence on the Earth. And we w these scientists are called, we call them Russian cosmists, so cosmologists. They appeared about a century ago. And what they were saying already a century ago is that they said that the universe is alive and everything in it, including us, of course, is alive. So living inside the living. And we continue this narrative, this direction of study in this manner. We consider that the universe is alive. And from this point of view, from the Russian cosmist's point of view, it contains, it's better to say, so what are the main principles of this point of view, which we call living inside the living? Is A, that the universe itself is alive. B, that the universe, the living universe within it, has a variety of life forms, including humanoid, including us, of course. And C, that this is the most important point, that on the Earth, everything that we encounter, all life forms, are the projection of all that is there in the universe. That's why they call the Earth the cradle of humanity, where we were born. And it's not only the cradle, but it's our kindergarten, our school, our university, where we are born, where we grow up, and we learn to communicate with all these types of life forms. And having learned to communicate with each other, with all these life forms, then we evolve to the point that we go out, then we leave the Earth, and we go beyond the Earth into outer space. And then we may meet our galactic neighbors, extraterrestrials. But are we this level? Are we already this level of evolution that we can go out and communicate? Or are we not this the needed level to go there? We believe that we are not that level, that we have to learn to communicate with each other and to treat all the life forms present on the Earth with a certain attitude, with an ethical attitude, respecting all life forms and learning to communicate with them. Maybe it's us humans, maybe animals, viruses, plants, anything, you name it. And from this point of view, who are extraterrestrials? Because we consider that, we believe that all the life forms on Earth are the projection of those life forms existing in the universe already. We believe that these life forms, we can consider them extraterrestrials and learn to communicate with them. And for us, it's a good evidence that there are many life forms beyond the Earth. Only we did not yet learn to travel those distances to other planets, to other galaxies. Of course, we are not going to go there burning fossil fuels. We have to invent something. And to invent something, we have to evolve in our consciousness, in our intelligence, in everything, in our technologies. And we can learn, we can discover those technologies when we grow to a certain level. It's like an unfolding knowledge. First, you are the seed, then you grow, then you become a tree, then there you deliver fruits, some. And we are just, right now, we are growing, and we have to grow to a certain level to discover this knowledge. So you wanted to ask something, Jay.
Do you feel that this is achievable in our lifetimes? I mean, I look at the way the world is now, and it's kind of, I'm optimistic because I think that the problems that are happening in the world are likely going to push us into becoming a more positive and a wiser species in the long run. These things that are happening now may actually end up, assisting us in getting past our current issues and moving into a next paradigm, a new paradigm for humanity. But do you think that this is achievable within specifically, let's say, our lifetimes?
I believe yes. The thing is, the turning point is then when you decide, when you take a decision. You take decision to change, and then you don't know really how it will go on. At first, it may seem very complicated, very abrupt change that will demand many efforts to take. But when you take the decision, when you start on this path, it becomes easier as you go. So it's the current situation is very, I should say, very extreme, because really we are approaching a verge of self-destruction, where they can start some irreversible processes of our destruction, destruction bias, destruction of the biosphere. And we are part of biosphere. Is it a suicidal behavior? So, you know, maybe when you smoke, when there's a smoker, you show him a cigarette and say, this is the cigarette. If you smoke it, you die. One of the cigarettes in the pack will kill you. Will you continue smoking or not? Some people say, I don't care. I will die in the end. And the other person may say, may start to think, maybe he should stop. Maybe not. So I think this is when you take a decision, you see that this is killing you. This is killing the planet. You're tired of the divide and conquer principle being implemented everywhere, in your family, in your society, in everywhere. And something changes in your mind. I don't know how to describe it. Like you give up smoking.
Yeah, I think
I was a smoker.
So was I.
Now I'm not smoking.
Yeah. Well, I still use a vape pen. I still have a vape, so I haven't really quit smoking. I've just quit smoking cigarettes. So I'm not there yet. But I know what you mean, and it's a good comparison, because there are people that will never solve those problems, they'll never address those issues, and there are people that will look at those issues and try and make a good situation out of it. And so hopefully humanity will make the good situation out of it and change its behaviors. But I do think it's actually a part of natural evolution, perhaps human evolution, because we're just individual humans. It's very hard for us to look at everything going on and make sense of it. But if we were able to perhaps zoom out and look at the human species from above and look at what we're doing over time, I think we probably are evolving. And these times where there are very strict rules or authoritarianism or just, you know, political problems, conflicts and war, I think all of this is actually a part of evolution. It's a way in which humanity stumbles through developing and growing and getting stronger. And so I do think that really, because the way the world is right now is pretty crazy, I actually see that as the best evidence for there being a change and that something else is coming in, because the current system and the current way of being is collapsing, and it's crumbling away. And at least it feels that way. It feels like things are starting to crumble away, systems that have been in place for a long time and ways of being and ways of looking at reality. It's all being challenged now. So it can look like the end of the world, but maybe it's just the end of a chapter in the human story, and we're going into the next chapter, you know?
It's like a Hollywood movie when a lot of things are happening and people are about to die, but then they continue sticking to a decision that they have made some time before. So for example, the hero decides to save his girlfriend or something like this, to save the world, to not give up. He takes this decision, and in this situation, which may seem extreme to him, to all people involved in it, when almost the whole world will crumble, he sticks to his decision. He does not give up, and then the situation changes in an unexpected way. So it's they call it the leap of faith. You know?
Yeah.
So this is like a test that will test your aspiration, the power of your desire, what you really are. because in those Hollywood movies, they also show some bad guys who at first they seem good guys, but then in the extreme situation, they betray or they give up or they run away, hide away. And then we can see how, as they say, they face the instant karma, you know?
Yeah.
As for the good guys, they continue on their path, and eventually there is a happy end. I think this is a very, I don't know, maybe it's a good example or not, but things seem very extreme right now. Maybe not 100% of the time, but there are signs of some processes, species disappearing, ice melting, many things. And ozone layer is very much destroyed. And there are some political tension. They want to put weapons in space for the security reasons, as they say, security with guns. Isn't it funny?
Yeah. This is actually something I wanted to ask, because one of the AEU's primary goals is the de-weaponization of space, that we must enter space as a peaceful species. But you know, given the current state of global politics and the animosity between Western governments and, you know, governments like Russia and China, I mean, do you think it's realistic that we will enter a space peaceful kind of collaboration within this time? Because, you know, we have a lot of problems with our leadership worldwide. And I imagine that there probably already are space-based weapons platforms that are already in orbit as we speak. So are you looking at this as something to try and tackle within the next few years? Is this something that the AEU is actively trying to engage global leadership on this subject?
Yes, the Association Ecology of the Unknown and the social movement that was established in 2021, the Ethics of the Cosmos, are promoting this treaty on the prevention of the placement of weapons in outer space, which, when signed by countries of the world, would become the world binding law to ban space-based weapons. And this initiative has a long history in Russia. And recently, Russia and China, they declare their joint statement, where there was their confirmation that they are continuing their efforts on the prevention of the placement of weapons in outer space, prevention of an arms race in space. So we are actively promoting it, and this is one of our primary goals, not only because this is something which is for the higher good of humanity, peace, but also because that we know 100% that we are not alone in the universe. Believe it or not, we're not alone in the universe. And there are some laws that the universe has. And those laws say that no one is allowed to go with weapons into outer space, because outer space is the domain of peace and evolution and teaching each other. And you cannot start an arms race there. That's why those our galactic neighbors are not interfering. They're watching from the side, and we can see those UFOs, those signs of ET presence on Earth, and they may contact some individuals to speak about this to humanity, to make some hints about this, because they cannot interfere in our decision making, because here in the solar system we are the major acting force. We are in charge of it. We must take this decision by ourselves, that we want to evolve, that we want to cooperate, we want to get along with each other, and then the gates will open, like in a Hollywood movie. The gates will open.
I imagine you're, I mean, I like this idea, and you know, I hope you're right. But what makes you think this? What makes you think this is the way it is, that they don't interfere with us and that they're waiting for us to try and develop on our own? It seems like the realistic approach to me, but why do you feel that that's the case?
Because this is common sense and this is logic. It's like you're teaching a child. The child needs to learn to walk himself. He will not learn to walk if you're always holding him or you're trying to move his feet like this. He stands up and he falls down. He stands up and he falls down. He bumps his head everywhere. And eventually he walks, and this is his knowledge, because he learned it himself or herself to walk. And as he learns to walk, then there's the next stage of his evolution. Now he can run, play football, he can jump, he can do everything that involves walking and running. And you cannot help him in any way to learn to walk, because he learns to walk himself. And imagine that this child is humanity, and you, a grown-up, a conscious man, his father maybe, you are like a higher intelligent force, like ETs to us. Because there are signs of ET presence. Who are these guys? Of course, they are more evolved, because they learn to navigate through space. They learn this instant transportation through these enormous distances. If they were hostile, they would have long conquered us. But why? Why do they need? Why would they need that? They just treat us like our brothers, brothers in consciousness, brothers in peace, just brothers, like species, like your little brother. I don't know how to say. And of course, they want to see how we evolve, and then they can interact with us on this level, because this point is very important. You cannot teach someone how to love or how to become friends with someone or how to walk, because you will teach him nothing. He needs to open it by himself. And he opens these things as he grows naturally, or as he meets other people, meets his classmates, whoever. This is just common sense, and this is also what you can conclude through your observations of how they appear, those ETs, those ET crap, studying all those cases, testimonies of contactees, people who saw something. So this is just pieces of puzzles coming together, and you see this whole picture.
Yeah. I mean, you know, some of the strong examples of this gradual teaching, or just being in the background but sometimes interfering is cases like the Zimbabwe primary school case, where all of the school children were exposed. There was, you know, I think there was a something like 60 or 70 school children that saw these flying saucers, and one of them landed. There was actually an alien gray being came out of one of these craft, and there was, I think, at least two children, but definitely one was no less than 3 or 5 feet away from this gray alien, and they locked eyes with it. They looked into its eyes, and they suddenly had all of these images of trees burning and the oceans, you know, like the icebergs melting. And it was almost like these children, as they grew older and they became adults and they were interviewed about these experiences, they feel that they were being told that these things are how, you know, this is how humanity needs to focus on the planet. They need to focus on treating it with more respect and being good stewards of the planet. And this is the impression that these children got when they had exposure to these extraterrestrial beings, these grays. And so I think you're right, at least from a human perspective, it's the logical approach to keep an eye on your children, but let them make their own mistakes and let them grow and let them learn, and just kind of be there in the background just in case things happen. For example, I do think that if we were to have a full global nuclear war, I think that they would prevent that. I don't know, but I just feel that if it came to a position where we were going to completely destroy ourselves and we were going to destroy most of the planet, I think that there would probably be some level of intervention, you know, like the parents taking the matches away from the children to stop them from burning the house down. So I agree with you that it seems logical that they're keeping that kind of observation role and just making sure we don't hurt ourselves too badly.
Yes, and there were numerous cases of them interfering. Mm. When there was a malfunction of nukes in nukes arsenal, it was in Soviet Union and Russia in the USA. There are many testimonies on this subject, also in the public domain and in the UFO community. And in our association, there are people, members of the association, who were military generals, now they retired, and who were in positions in those places where there were these nukes, and they were reported of the ET craft landing and shutting down the malfunctioning nukes, because I don't remember all the details, but there are many cases of this interference. But what is the most important, it's again, returning to the things that from where I started, who are the extraterrestrials and how do we perceive them? We need some evidence. We want to see an ET craft landing, some people coming out of this craft, looking into the eyes, or leaving some evidence, some traces. And there are many cases like this. But mostly what we see and what we also don't see is their influence, like in the background. Because it's like, you know, there's a saying, when 10 people are watching at an elephant from a close distance and they're standing in different places like this, one of them sees a nail of an elephant, the other sees just gray skin, the third person sees, I don't know, the eye or something, and those people have very little information about the object that is in front of them. But one of them tells, this is just a gray wall. I'm telling you, I saw that. The other one says some different things. But you can have the full image, the full understanding of what is in front of you when you put these pieces together, when you see it from the side, like cosmonauts and astronauts see our planet from the side when they go to space. When you see it from the side, it's a totally different picture. It's a whole picture. And the understanding comes to you really, really fast. And you can feel it. You not only see it, you feel it, and you have it in your heart, your emotions, your consciousness. And that is how ETs really interfere, as you said it, and how they affect us, how they observe us. They are multidimensional because they have this means of transportation through space. And they say that you cannot go faster than the speed of light. And they do that because they use other dimensions, which we have not yet discovered. But they are there. They are there. And in mathematics, there are signs of it, that there are many dimensions, not three or four. And they can impact us, like, not like in one way, but many ways and from many sides and instantly, like the whole planet or whole country, or they can contact individuals through their consciousness, and they use their ability to do this when they really need to, when there is some extreme situation. And they always show us that they care about us. They do not want us to destroy each other, but they cannot interfere like directly, land and say stop it, because that will do nothing. Like the show again, like the show in the Hollywood movies when ETs land and people start to shoot or something. Because this is in your mindset. This is the idea. You have an idea of this elephant. You think that this is a gray wall, and when you see the real extraterrestrial, how do you perceive him or her? Can you really fully perceive him when you see a shining dot in the sky, like moves like this and then vanishes? What did you see? And who was there? So do you know, do you feel what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, no, I think this elephant idea works quite well with people within the UFO community as well, because, you know, like you just said, you see a silver object zipping around in the sky. What is the first thing that people might think? Well, they might think, okay, that's some sort of advanced spacecraft, and these must be visitors from another planet. But when you get into the deeper levels of the UFO subject, you start to unravel the layers of consciousness and the kind of strangeness of the UFO subject. It suddenly doesn't become so simple to say, oh, these are just aliens from another planet. I mean, there may be, and maybe some of them really are just from another planet, but there is this strange space that's almost spiritual. And I think it's, for me, it's always been about, there needs to be a symbiosis, a connecting between spirit and science, between spirituality and science. These two things, they are just two different ways of observing the same thing, and they need to come together. And I think that the UFO subject, I really do, I think it represents that symbiosis. I think that this UFO is basically saying, hey, this is what happens when you mix together your science, your innovation, your technology with your spirit, your philosophy, your creativity. When these two things come together, you create this thing. Try and do it. And, you know, when people, the reason why I think this is so strongly, because people, and I'm one of these people, have had contact situations through consciousness, through getting into meditative states, through asking, you know, the universe to show me something and having a response and having something actually come by in my sky that I knew could not be dismissed as just some random thing. It was very much an anomalous event. I don't know what it was, but it was anomalous. And so it responds to consciousness, which first of all makes you go, okay, consciousness isn't just in my brain. It's not just being generated by my body, because if I can send thoughts out and something can respond, that must mean it's traveling through the medium of space and time. It's moving through that. So it opens up that idea of universal consciousness, of living cosmos, as you say. And also, it is a technology, it's a craft, it's a spaceship of some sort, it's moving around in ways that we cannot understand. So it's, like I said, it's like technology and spiritual put together. And I think that's what the UFO is.
Absolutely. I think you get it 100% right. Maybe not 100%, but very close.
Close.
Yeah. Because really, I think this is because those people, they do not have this gap between science and religion, peace and war, good and bad. They just have this natural way of living, abiding the laws of the universe and evolving and developing their star system, each other, and making contacts throughout the universe. While we, humanity, are in this situation when we have this divide and conquer everywhere. UFOs are not UFOs. Real or false. Good or bad. Black or white. Republicans or Democrats. So it is everywhere, everywhere. Even in the family, in the families, when they're fathers and sons, and so many things, you name it. It's in our consciousness, really. And that's why, because they say, oh, we cannot understand how they move. We cannot understand the principles of it. Yes, of course, you cannot understand, because you have this thing in your mind that always wants to divide. Is this this or that? Is this quantum mechanics, or is this relativity theory? How do we invent the theory of everything? We want to combine these two things, but we cannot do this. Why? Because this is in your consciousness, in our consciousness. And when we eliminate this gap, which is really, it's only in our consciousness, it's not in real life, then we can connect dots. We can see this picture from the side and understand.
Do you think that we are just dealing with aliens from planets, or do you think that maybe there's other things going on here, like higher dimensional beings, things that people would normally, if we're going especially back in time, you know, people would maybe say they were angels or demons, whatever. Do you think that we're dealing with that kind of thing as well, or is it just civilizations from other planets and star systems?
I think we're dealing with both, with everything. Because I tell you something. Do you know that our brain throughout our lifetime functions only by 5%? And that when they study genes of the human, they can define just a few genes. Well, not a few, but compared to the amount of genes that human has, there's a very few. And the other, they call it trash genes, like we don't need them.
Yeah, really. Like junk DNA or trash. Yeah, genes. Junk DNA.
But this is really our potential, our potential to evolve. We just think that we know something, we know everything a lot, but really we know really little. And what about the oceans of the earth?
Yeah.
We have just studied maybe 5% those depths of the oceans. Mm.
And there seems to be UFOs in the oceans as well. They're flying around in the oceans as well.
Yeah. So and the oceans, the biosphere, the air. So there are so many things that we do not know yet. I'm not speaking of the universe of our galaxy that contains trillions of stars. Can you imagine this? Only our galaxy. And an interesting coincidence, maybe it's not a coincidence, that our brain contains approximately the same amount of nervous cells that the Milky Way galaxy stars. Mm. So we know, I'm just trying to say that we know very little. And of course, those anomalous phenomena, as we call it, is just something that we do not know. It's the unknown that sometimes gets in contact with us, or maybe we learn to contact this consciously. And of course, our world is multidimensional. And if we want to see evidence, we can see only a tiny piece of spectrum, of electromagnetic spectrum. We see only just a little fragment
areas.
If we want to see with our eyes, we can see more with our technical devices like x-rays and other things. We can see more and even take photos and learn about the universe, the stars. We can look into the cosmos very far through this means, but we can know even more when we just switch to a little different path of not that we only develop our technical means of observation, but our physical body, this junk DNA. It's not junk, it's just undiscovered. It's the evolutional potential. So, and if we concentrate on that, it all will start from this decision, and it's already happening. It's already happening. As you see, there are good signs of awakening, as they say, awakening, but it's the healing. I think it will go faster as more and more people will just realize this. It's everywhere. It's for the lack of words, I just can give you some examples from different sides of our life. Like no weapons in space. It's just no weapons in space. It's just one side of it. But it's very physical, very understandable for everyone, because everybody wants peace. Everybody wants the children to not go to war, to live a peaceful life, and that's why we have chosen this aspect like one of our primary goals.
One of the things that someone was talking to me about this, I can't remember who I was speaking with, but they brought up a good point, which is that conflict is you know, it's at least on planet Earth, conflict is a part of evolution. You know, animals kill animals, plants kill plants, we have hunted, and you know, all of these progressions of evolution involve like a level of conflict or competition within the environment. And once you become a human being and you start progressing in a very different way to the animal kingdom, you know, we've swapped environmental and evolutionary development for technological development, political development, philosophical development. You know, these are the ways in which we grow now. It's kind of gone up onto a different platform of understanding. Is it likely that other species, other civilizations, other alien beings probably did go through a similar story of conflict, of wars, of, you know, issues between their civilization. Perhaps it was thousands of years ago and they are now much wiser and they're much maturer and they know that this isn't the way anymore. But because of the way you look at how life evolves on planet Earth and there is a genuine evolutionary conflict going on as things progress, do you think it is likely that if there are these extraterrestrial beings that they did go through conflict, but perhaps it was far back in their past and they're now more wise?
Maybe there can be a possibility, but you know, this is something that we think of extraterrestrials as we would think of ourselves.
Yeah.
Because as they say, conflict is natural. I don't know. Because conflict is, it means two sides struggling with each other. It's again, you know, the divide and conquer. But okay, there were conflicts, and it's good if you learn a lesson from conflicts. If you learn a lesson, then you evolve. Then it's correct. Yes, conflicts like promote evolution. But really, I believe that conflicts are not mandatory. And one more thing is, human, it's not an animal, of course. He has a physical body which seems like behaving like an animal, but it's not, because it's a whole different realm, because humans have their spirituality. And if you discard your spirituality, yes, you become an animal. And then you behave like an animal. But in the animal kingdom, there are different laws. And you may be eaten by an animal, like animals eat each other, and they hunt each other. And you start on this, obeying these laws, if you consider yourself an animal. You know, doesn't make sense. Do you understand? What I'm trying to say is that a human is not an animal. Human has his spirituality, and this makes him human, really. And he can develop, he can take care of others and evolve.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think we're on the same page here, because as I was saying, the human being has come up out of nature and has taken on new properties of evolution, like creating political infrastructures or creating technologies, but we still have a little bit of that animal left in the back of our mind, and that's what causes the wars, that's what causes the territory and the conflict, and no, this is my country and you can't come in, and no, this is my country and you can't come in. Like, that's the animal part of the brain. That's not the spirit of humanity. That's where we've come from, back in the jungle, back in fighting with the other animals. We still haven't gotten rid of that part of our mind. But I agree with you. The spirit of humanity, the essence of humanity, is not the physical being. It's not the animal body. It's the essence of that creative spirit, that creative soul, whatever you want to call it. That is what humanity really is. And I think that we're slowly unfolding into what our true nature is. But we still obviously have quite a way to go, because, you know, right now it's a pretty crazy world. So there's still some learning to do. But I think that we're doing that. I do think we're doing that over time.
Yes, I think we will manage to do it. And you just said an interesting thing about your soul, that human is not only his physical body, but also his soul, which is his divine part, as they call it. It really is. And there is one. I think a human is a multidimensional being, like we would perceive ETs are. They really are multidimensional, and we are also, but we have to unfold it.
Mm-hmm.
We have to unfold it through our efforts in evolution. It will naturally unfold.
Mm-hmm.
I think, this is interconnection with each other. Everybody feels that, really.
Yeah.
But maybe not so many people consciously use it, this ability of human.
Yeah.
But everybody feels that. Everyone feels it. If you're loved or not, if you're lied to or not, even in this simple, maybe this is simple examples, but people interact with each other on all those levels. Maybe they are not aware consciously of it, but on the divine level, on their energetics level, and on their physical level, all these levels, they interact simultaneously. But the more you can consciously comprehend, the more influence you have, and you can influence others to see it and to also learn it. And I think this is something each one of us should do. And this is just a natural way of teaching each other. They say that a human, before the boy or girl reaches the age of 7, they learn things through their subconsciousness. Like they're in the family, they see the relationship between their mother and father, and they learn these things subconsciously. Then they begin to learn more consciously, but all these things are happening at the same time. And it may seem complicated, but it's very natural. And the more we become aware of this, of the possibilities of the human, how we influence the surrounding world, other species, the biosphere, the outer space. Of course, we influence the outer space too. That's why we cannot go with weapons there. And this is just the way of evolution. And yes.
Speaking of the way of evolution, something that we're doing that has created kind of like a big divide between people. Some people say, yes, this is a good thing. And other people say, no, this is a scary thing, is artificial intelligence and how we seem to be getting closer to a point where the human body will merge with artificial intelligence, will merge with technology. And so you have people that are scared that type of situation would cause us to all have, like, you know, like a hive mind, like we're all just one mind and nobody has any control over their own thoughts and everyone's just plugged into this kind of artificial network. And, you know, that's a very scary idea. And then there are others, and I kind of lean into both because I see how there are problems with this type of thing, but I also see how maybe it's a part of our journey into space and into the cosmos, is that we have to kind of merge with technology to some extent. So what do you think about this? Because we both believe in the spirit of humanity and, you know, the soul of humanity. And I think that some people think that we're going to lose our spirit or lose our soul if we merge into these technologies. So I'd like to know what you think about artificial intelligence and the way that we're going with kind of biotechnology and that type of thing.
I think this is called transhumanism.
Yes, transhumanism, yeah.
Yeah. So transhumanism, it sees the human as a biorobot,
mm-hmm.
as a biorobot with a predictable set of algorithms. And they say that human can be programmed, reprogrammed, or parts of his body can be changed, or you can download things into your brain, where you can connect to artificial intelligence. I think this is a dead end of evolution, because it's very limited. How many parts of your body can you change? What will be in the end? You know, as I said earlier, there are some Hollywood movies that portray this situation. For example, Terminator.
Or The Matrix.
The Matrix, yes. This is a highly likely scenario when you trust your life, your purpose to the machines, to something that you think will be friendly, but really these things have no ethics, which makes us human. That's why these machines just use you, because they're not human. You would want.
We could say that humans have committed genocides. We've done terrible things. You know, our own ethics is questionable at times. So maybe there's like a logic component to artificial intelligence that would say it may have a different way of looking at it than a human would, because we've done some pretty terrible things.
Yes, and the things that we create in this mindset will also continue doing things. That's why this is the dead end of evolution. And what we need is pay attention to your physical body, to this junk DNA, to this to your brain, how it functions. What are the possibilities of your body? The telepathy, this levitation, things that now may seem like a fiction, like a fantasy, but back in the day, many theories that are now very well used also seemed fiction, like Wi-Fi, like our cell phones. If you go back a century ago, just a century, it would it may seem like a magic.
Yeah.
You have your cell phone, you're speaking to someone like we're speaking right now, you see, you hear, you can interact. And things like I just said, like levitation, like telepathy, there are many cases of this being employed by humans. Showed, demonstrated.
Well,
humans.
I suppose. Sorry, go on, please.
It may seem they call it anomalous, or they also want evidence. But I think 10 years will pass, and it will become more natural. We will become used to it. We just evolve and discover these new things. If we go on this path of learning who we are, our potential, it's just enormous. It's more promising. It's more promising if you learn how to teleport your body, or make a spacecraft like ETs have, then you just compared to. You just remove some organs and you replace them, or you make some huge craft that will burn all the oil on planet Earth to go to a star. I'm just trying to say that we are not biorobots. We are living beings with capabilities that may seem magical now. But we really are. I think we should pay attention to this side. Pay attention to this side of us, than to technology and transhumanism.
See, I. This is the thing. I agree. But I also, it's kind of like for thousands of years, we were shamanistic. We lived in tribes. We took psychedelic substances. We went into trances and we lived with nature and we lived with the world. That's how we were for a long time. And then we moved out of that and we entered into the age of enlightenment and, you know, industry and agriculture and civilization, and then suddenly technology. And so through that, we lost a lot of our spirit. We lost a lot of our connection to nature. So I kind of think because I don't see how we're going to go back into tribes doing what we were doing thousands of years ago. Humans are on a technological path. We are on a technological path. That's what the majority of the human civilization is doing. So for me, I kind of look at it and go, okay, maybe there's a way for the spirit that we lost all those thousands of years ago. Maybe there's a way for that to kind of emerge through technology. And, you know, we don't have to become slaves to the machines. We don't have to live in the matrix, but maybe technology can assist in increasing that consciousness. You know, I think about the fact that there's all of this research going into psychedelics right now, like the psychedelic research is starting to come back. And also just the way that physics is changing, looking at quantum mechanics. Perhaps through these things, spirit can bubble up and become another part of the human story. So, because we've been using technology ever since we banged some stones together and made fire, or ever since we sharpened a stick and made a spear. You know, that's all technology. We've been using our environment to create extensions of ourselves through technology, and now we're at a point where we have these microphones and we have these screens and we can, you know, these are all very useful things. I think that if we go too far, we could lose our humanity. But if we use it in the right way, then perhaps technology can just be a tool to help us boost our spirituality, increase our spirituality. I think the worrying thing is that the people that are in control of the technological arena, the people that are actually in control, they're not necessarily very ethical people. And, you know, it's more about profit. It's more about using our data. It's more about exploiting us as consumers. But that technology could be used in a beneficial way. And so I think that I guess because I look at the way of the world and I think that it looks like we're going down this technological route, my only hope is that through that, we can discover spirit. And obviously there will be people who just live in the forest and live in the mountains and you know, I want nothing to do with this. I'm not going to do anything with this. But I do think that there's a chance that technology can actually be beneficial if we don't get lost within it.
Jay, absolutely. And you know what? First of all, yes, of course, we can make technology help us and help our spirit bubble up, as you said it. But the thing that will help us do this is the change of our mindset first. Because look at all technology that we are developing now. In the end, they always apply this technology to make more perfect weapons.
Yeah,
more sophisticated weapons to kill more and fast. That's the implementation of this sick mindset that we have right now. It's already dissolving, but we still have it.
Yeah.
Of everything you discover, each scientific discovery, people start to think, how can we apply it in the military? How can we apply it in our weapons to make it more perfect, to dominate, to have our security, to win the arms race, if it will happen? So this is what always pushes you to this road of going into nowhere. But if we change this mindset, if we dissolve this, if we turn over the page and start this new chapter, then we'll have these technologies. And I will tell you more. There was a case in Russia when there was a crash of an IT craft, and the researchers went to that place and they found some artifacts and they studied in the laboratories, and those pieces were made of metal, but this metal contained almost every element of the periodic system.
Which case is this? Is this a known case?
Yes, it's a very known case. I can find out the exact name and the year when it happened and send it to you later.
Yeah,
I can't remember now.
Yeah, yeah.
But the very interesting, it's not the end, it's just the beginning. When they studied this metal and they exposed it to some different temperatures, it changed its structure, it changed what it was containing of.
Oh, it changed the parts it was made from.
Yes, and it behaved like a living thing. Still, it was metal. It was very very thin, but still very strong. And so this is just an example of the technology that we can have to do whatever we want, but to make such technology, you can see it, you can discover it when you see from the side, when you look from the side at what you already have and how to connect dots and how to enlighten, how to find an enlightenment of, oh my God, I think I know how it works. And you can only have this happening when you change your mindset, because the universe is alive. It's not a cold, careless void. It's already, it's a living thing too. And it has some laws, and you can find out about these laws as you grow up as a race, as a species, in your evolution. And the higher your evolution is, the higher your ethical level is. And when you have this ethical level, you would not even think of making it a weapon, because you know that when you hurt someone, you hurt yourself. Because you're interconnected. You live inside a living organism, and if you hurt it or hurt someone, you just hurt yourself, because it's all written in your genes. And we also have this things here in Russia studied and discovered that everything you do, becomes written in your genes. If you let's say if you're doing some good things, if you show love, if you have this beautiful emotions that human can have, if you care about someone, your genes become more perfect, and they just develop. And I don't know how to say it.
But you're saying that you get less maybe errors in your genes and like, you know, less problems developing. I mean, they say this about, there was actually a few studies done on depression and negative emotion and the development of cancerous tumors and the development of sickness in the body and how your emotions can actually impact your physical body.
Sure. And it really affects, but this mindset just won't let you see it, because you think of money, you think of rivalry, you think of going ahead of someone in your development to sell more, and this is a vicious circle. It seems okay when you're inside of it. And when you're outside, like you see your planet from the side, and it's a well-known phenomenon. It's called the overview effect. Astronauts who saw our planet and the universe, they call they say I experienced that I was observed. The universe watched, looked at me like a living thing, this blackness. It's like a tiger in front of you. It's like you were reading a book, then you raise your head and there's a tiger in front of you, and watch him in the eyes. And when you see the Earth, there's a change in your psyche. There's a change in your consciousness. You instantly, you realize that we are one organism, and this is our home, our planet. This has a very, very thin atmosphere. It's really very thin, like a skin of an apple, if an apple is the size of the Earth.
Mm.
And when they see it,
yeah,
it's very natural when you're out of it, of your everyday life, and you see it from the side, and you realize this. And that's all, and that's the thing that all astronauts talk about when they are asked,
yeah,
what was the most powerful impression of going to space. So I think something like this must happen to us, or should happen, or is happening. But the more your intention is to go there, the faster it will happen, because it's like in an airport. The doors will open only when you go. If you're waiting them to open, they will not open.
Yeah,
you have to go. Yeah. You have to step forward and then they open. Something like this.
Do you think that that's why like anti-gravity and these kind of technologies, do you think that this is why this stuff might have been held back? Because whoever's holding on to this stuff just thinks the human species is not ready. We're just not ready to have these types of technologies, like the UFO style technology. If there is, because I think, you know, like you said, the Russians are studying this stuff, the Americans are studying this stuff, the Chinese are probably studying it. You know, I think that most superpowers in the world probably have some level of research into this. And of course, we all know the American deep history with Roswell and all these other issues. So I think it's likely that we are studying these things, and that there is a potential that we've had breakthroughs in secret and that they've been kept back. But do you think, because a lot of people will say, oh, you know, they're criminals, they're keeping this from us. And in a way, that's true. But do you think that maybe they're doing that because they're looking at the human species and going, we can't handle this yet. We can't deal with this yet.
It's an interesting question. Very interesting. I think that they're holding it back because they really don't know what to do with it.
Mm.
Because they have no view of the future. Because they realize that they are in this vicious circle. And what can they do with it? Sell it or get patents or what? They just don't know. One, and two, they are afraid to be in charge of it, I think. Because if they reveal, from that point, they will be in charge of what is going to happen next. Maybe they just have little understanding of how to implement it in a peaceful way, like you said it.
Yeah, yeah.
And they just keep it back just in case. But I really think that maybe they don't see the future really very well and just keep this in just in case. And what I wanted to say more is that I forgot.
Well, it feels like I've said this before, it kind of feels like we were supposed to use fossil fuels, oil, gas, this stuff for a little bit of time on like the human timeline. We were supposed to use it for a little bit of time. And then you see, especially, and it, you know, it was happening before this, especially with Nikola Tesla, you know, the kind of inventions and the way in which Nikola Tesla was looking at energy, that could have been one of the ways in which we started moving down towards this UFO technology style. But then even in the 1950s, you know, there was all of this excitement about anti-gravity. Anti-gravity is going to be the next thing. You know, you can find all of these old articles from the 1950s that are saying, you know, all of these scientists are saying that the next big thing is not going to be combustion engines. It's going to be anti-gravity. And then it just suddenly stopped. It just stopped. And it became a really controversial thing to do that type of science and to be interested in that type of science. You know, people within the scientific community would be laughed at if they said, oh, well, you know, let's look at anti-gravity. Be like, oh, that's a silly sci-fi thing. It's never going to happen. But it kind of, and I think that what happened, because there's a lot of evidence for labs being shut down and like the US government coming in and confiscating things, or scientists just disappearing off the face of the earth. So it feels to me like we were supposed to naturally progress beyond fossil fuels, and we haven't done that. It's been held back, maybe for good reasons, maybe for justifiable reasons, not because they're evil, not because they're bad people, but because they don't think we're ready. But the consequence of holding that back is that we've been relying on fossil fuels, on gas, on oil, and these things have stimulated wars. We've invaded countries over their resources. We're destroying the ozone layer because of our pollution. And it kind of feels like this is evolution saying to us, you've been doing this for too long. You were only supposed to use the resources on this earth for a small amount of time. You were supposed to use it to help you figure out technologies, and then you were supposed to move beyond that. And it feels like maybe that's been held back. Like we've literally been held back from evolving properly. And that could be one of the reasons why we have so many problems now, is because our evolution got held back.
Yes, it may be the case. It may be the case. And I heard some stories of that. And I heard stories of scientists disappearing, as you said, it in Russia too.
Yeah.
And maybe those people who are getting huge benefits from selling oil and things like this, fossil fuels, they just don't want it to be revealed during their lifetime.
Yeah, maybe.
Because they have their salaries, they have their income, and they just, maybe they are tired, and they just don't want to go for a big change.
Yeah, maybe.
But this really is an illusion, because money is just an idea. It's just an idea of something very valuable. And if you change this idea in everybody's head that money is no longer valuable, then what will you go for in the next moment? And we believe that today, the most valuable thing is time. It's time. Like, you don't need to wait until you pass away to reveal those technologies, this knowledge. If you have some knowledge that may be helpful and for the higher good, I think it's better to reveal it, because time, you don't know what will happen to you after your death. You don't really know.
Yeah. I think that a lot of people are likely feeling that way, especially with all of the conversations that are happening now about UFOs in the mainstream. because of the fact that it's become more acceptable to speak about these things, I think that there probably are a lot of individuals who have knowledge that are sitting there and going, you know, I want to say something. And maybe they're just waiting for the right person to reach out to them and ask them the right question. And they'll say, yes, I did this, or I know about this or this. So I think that we're probably, I would imagine within the next few years, we will see more people come out and put their hand up and say, yes, I was involved in this, or I know about that. I hope so. I do hope so, because like you said, what's the point in holding on to that and taking it to your grave? Why wouldn't you share that information? So I hope you're right about that. I really do. And I think you probably are right. Before we wrap up, I asked some of my Patreon community if they had any questions to ask you. By the way, for everyone listening, if you want to join a fast-growing social hub of researchers and experiences, you can support Project Unity on Patreon, and you can gain access to our dedicated Discord server. And that's where we all communicate with each other on a regular basis. So links to the Project Unity Patreon can be found in the description box below, and your support really does make a huge difference. But I asked some of my Patreons if they had any questions, and I got a few responses. If you're happy for me to ask you some of these questions.
Sure, please go ahead.
So the first question comes from Mike Hotel Echo, and he asks, is Timothy aware of the Salyut 7 incident where Russian cosmonauts claimed to have seen angels in space?
Yes, I heard about it. And they even made a movie, which is called Salyut 7. It's a movie that was released in 2017, I believe, which portray the situation. And I was consulting people who were filming that movie. Oh. Yes, and I brought some spacesuits to them. Like they used it, them like costumes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a very well-known case, but... they claim to see angels. The question is, yes, I'm aware of it. And maybe the question, what were the angels? And who was that? If you ask me, I don't know. Maybe those were extraterrestrials, or maybe some really angels.
Can you remember how they described them? How did they describe them?
No, I didn't get in touch with those cosmonauts because it was in the time when I was a very little child.
Yeah, but did, like within the story that you've heard, because I've never heard of this this case before. So did they say to anyone what these things look like? If they said they look like angels, they must have looked like beings.
At that time, there was Soviet Union, and there was very strict rules for cosmonauts who could become a cosmonaut. At that time, they were almost all military pilots, and for military pilots, especially for cosmonauts, it was very strict to have a normal psyche. Normal state of your psyche, and I assume if they would have told about it too often, they would have been discarded as cosmonauts, because at that time you could not say about such things so freely as today. But I heard that there was this case, there was something that they saw, but I could not, I cannot tell more because I don't know. But I think it's very interesting that they saw something And it was even shown in the movie. Yeah. So it was something there.
So the next question comes from Mark OC, and he wants to ask how you look at the ways in which the UFO phenomenon has like shifted and changed over time. So throughout history, there have been reports of strange things in the sky, but the way in which they manifest visually seems to have changed as humanity's progressed. So why do you think the phenomenon is changing over time as humanity progresses?
The visual effect of the phenomenon.
Yeah, so like the soul, like there's stories of Roman soldiers seeing flaming shields in the sky or seeing long boats and things that made sense at the time. But when you look at it now, you go, well, maybe that was a UFO. And now you look at the modern age and it's flying saucers and spacecraft. So it's kind of like it's shifted and changed the way that it's visually shown over time. So I think he's just asking, why do you think that's the case?
I think it's because of the fact, because of the way how our eyesight and brain works. Because what you see with your eyes is really what your brain perceives through your eyes. The information goes through the nerves into your brain and is processed, and you see something. You really see it in your brain. And those times in ancient days, they described it like things that were normal to them then. Today we see some maybe different things, we describe it differently, but besides that, I think that, as I said earlier, we perceive just like a small fragment of who the ETs really are, and the description of a UFO may change even when two persons standing beside each other see one thing. Some people may describe it like one thing and the other may describe it a little bit different, because we believe that ETs have a possibility to show themselves to different people differently. They may contact one person in a way that nobody else will ever see them or hear them, or they may contact many people, or they may intentionally show themselves, reveal their craft in front of an audience, like when people meditate, or they call those ETs to come and show themselves. They may decide to show themselves for reasons. I think it all depends on this many factors that I have described. And of course, it changes from person to person. And the one more thing is that they also evolve. Their craft may evolve. There may be different races that come to humanity in different times of its history. So everything, I think it's just like life, it's naturally going. Things change. It's not like a program. Mm. Like I'm a bio-robot. I see black as black, white as white, and I'm a universal soldier. No, we're all living things and we're interconnected, and it goes like this, natural, and all changes. The aircraft changes and we change, our perception changes, and our perception may open and we may see more. Maybe there is a little shining dot, and simultaneously there's a voice in your head communicating with you. Like the multidimensional and they are manifesting themselves in 3D and in other dimensions as well. And if you have this ability to sense those dimensions, I believe you would sense all the signals from all other dimensions. Like you would see the thing, you would hear, you would have a telepathic contact. I think it works like this.
Next question is from Zab, and he wants to know if geopolitics wasn't an issue, and if the opportunity presented itself, would the AEU like to collaborate and share data with American UFO research groups, such as the recently created Galileo project through Harvard University? I'm assuming you're aware of the Galileo project. And would you ever consider, or do you think it's possible for the AEU to collaborate with such American research groups?
Yes, I think, we would love to collaborate with anyone who would want to approach us, because we believe when there are two sides, you can find mutual understanding in every case, only if you have intent to do this. And of course, we would like to collaborate to make some for the betterment of humanity and for mutual support. And I think there is no rules here except for the ethics, which is inherent in us. If we promise something, we will do this. So it works like this. I think, why not? Of course.
Well, I'll tell you, I interviewed Professor Avi Loeb, who's the guy that started the Galileo project, and they're certainly I've got a lot of hope in that group, and I think they're going to push forward in a good way. But Avi Loeb does think that consciousness is a generated phenomenon in the brain, and that matter is dead. So you'll have to, me and you are going to have to convince Avi Loeb to look at consciousness again in a different light, because as brilliant as he is, that was one of the things that I had an issue with, was that he's very much a material reductionist. Like he's a theoretical physicist, and he believes that there is no special conscious component to matter, to energy. Which I don't agree with, but nevertheless, I think that it's very important to have collaboration between groups like yours and groups like the Galileo Project. So who knows? Maybe we can look at connecting you guys together and seeing if there's any sort of shared benefit that can be had from that kind of relationship. I think it would be a good idea. I think that it would help to have international collaboration on this issue. So yeah, that's a good question from Zab. Zab had one more question as well. Does the AEU organization have any relationships with or access to Chinese UFO data collection?
To Chinese, once we were collaborating with Chinese, we have some connections with them, but not very strong connection.
Not strong connections. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it will develop with time. Regarding the first question, how can we collaborate? There's a Russian saying, a very good one, I think, in this case. It says, we are all in one submarine. So,
yeah,
when you're in a submarine, you have to collaborate with others. because you're underwater and you breathe the same air. So regarding collaboration, yes, sure. Sounds like a great idea and we should do this.
We're all in one submarine. I like that. That's a good way of looking at it, because we absolutely are floating around in the ocean of space, and we have the little shield around our planet, and we're all here together breathing the same oxygen. So we should collaborate more. And the last question comes from ET Person, and they want to know if you're familiar with a Russian UFO case that took place at Kapustin military base in 1948. It was involving a MiG-15 pilot and a UFO. And according to the story, both the MiG-15 pilot and the UFO crashed. So do you know anything about this case that was apparently Kapustin military base, 1948 UFO crash?
I know about Kapustin. In Russian, we say Kapustin Yar.
Kapustin Yar.
It's a very well-known place with a good UFO activity there. But regarding this particular case, I think I don't know. But I have my senior colleagues, which for sure know. I can ask them and maybe give an answer later. But I heard about this Kapustin. This place is very well known by its UFO activity. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks, Timothy. This has been, once again, just a great conversation. You know, it's really nice. Like, I feel like that you and me, we have very similar ideas around the phenomenon and very similar ideas about how we should be addressing it. So it's really... it's really, really lovely for me to sit down and talk with someone who I feel like our thoughts go around very quickly with each other, and we can communicate very easily on this subject. So I just want to say thank you for taking the time to sit down and have a conversation with me.
Jay, thank you as well. It was really a pleasure, and I also feel this connection and mutual understanding. And thank you for having me.